Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time we're going back to 1948 and the Supreme Court case Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. Now, I know rent control after World War II might not sound like the most thrilling topic.
It does sound a little dry.
Yeah, but believe me, the legal questions here get really interesting, especially when you think about how governments use emergency powers these days.
That's exactly right. What's so fascinating about this case is it makes us think about the whole idea of war powers. Like, does the authority that the government has during a war just disappear the second peace is declared? Or can it stick around to deal with all the stuff that war messes up, you know, the after effects?
Okay, so to set the scene for our listeners, it's 1947. The U.S. has just come out of World War II.
Yeah.
Millions of soldiers are coming home, and of course they need places to live. But housing is super scarce, partly because construction basically stopped during the war. So Congress passes this thing called the Housing and Rent Act to stop landlords from taking advantage of the situation.
It's pretty reasonable, right?
It does, on the surface. But then you have this real estate company in Cleveland, Cloyd W. Miller Co., and they decided to see just how far they could push this new law. They tried to raise rents, like some of them by a crazy 40 to 60%. And get this, they did it literally the day after the act went into effect.
Wow, talk about bold. It makes you wonder if they were trying to pick a fight on purpose. So what happened? Did anyone try to stop them?
Oh yeah, the housing expediter, a guy named Mr. Woods, sued them to enforce the act. Now you'd think this would be an open and shut case,
right? I would think so.
But here's the thing. The lower courts actually sided with the real estate company.
Really? Why?
Well, their logic was that because there were housing shortages, even before the war, Congress couldn't use its war powers as an excuse for rent control once the war was officially over.
So the lower courts basically said wars over war powers are gone. End of story.
Hmm.
But obviously someone thought that was wrong.
Oh, yeah. It didn't sit well at all. The case ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court. And guess what? In a unanimous decision, they completely overturned what the lower courts had said.
So this must have been a big moment for figuring out just how far war powers can go. What did the Supreme Court say?
Well, Justice Douglas wrote the opinion, and it's a pretty powerful response to that limited view the lower courts had. The court basically said that the effects of war, things like a housing crisis, can go on for years. They said Congress has the authority to deal with those lingering problems no matter when the actual fighting stopped.
So it's not about drawing a line in the sand the second a peace treaty is signed. It's about understanding that war has a ripple effect.
Exactly. Justice Douglas even used this really strong language to make that point. He wrote, "The war power includes the power to remedy the evils which have arisen from its rise and progress." It's like the court was saying, hey, Congress, you don't get to just walk away from the mess you made by going to war.
I bet that hit home for a lot of people back then, especially those who were struggling to find affordable housing after the war. But did the court just say Congress was right? Or did they actually look at the law more closely?
Oh, they definitely dug deeper. They looked into what Congress intended when they passed the Housing and Rent Act. They looked at the history of the law, and they concluded that Congress specifically connected it to the war emergency. It wasn't just some random law they passed. Lawmakers deliberately used their war powers because they were trying to stabilize the housing market.
So the court was basically saying, look, Congress wasn't just flexing its muscles. They were using their war powers the way they were supposed to. But what about the argument that the act wasn't applied everywhere in the country? Wouldn't that be unfair to landlords in places that weren't really affected by the war?
The court addressed that too. They said Congress can be specific about where it uses its war powers. It doesn't have to force rent control on the whole country. It can focus on areas that were hit hardest by the war, like cities with tons of soldiers coming back. They pointed to the necessary and proper clause in the Constitution to support that idea.
So the Supreme Court basically gave Congress a lot of wiggle room here. A unanimous decision, clear reasoning, a focus on what Congress intended. It seems like a pretty clear victory for the government, right?
It seems that way. But even though all the justices agreed with the main decision, two of them, Justices Frankfurter and Jackson, they had some extra thoughts. And those are worth talking about because they highlight some really important nuances in the case.
Now that's what I call a cliffhanger. I guess our listeners will have to wait for part two to hear what those justices had to say. Welcome back to the show. Before the break, we were talking about Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co., and how the Supreme Court kind of expanded what we think of as war powers. And you hinted that two of the justices, Frankfurter and Jackson, had some interesting things to add. So what about Frankfurter? What did you have to say?
Well, his opinion was pretty straightforward. He basically said this case was just following an older case called Hamilton v. Kentucky Distilleries. Mm-hmm. You know, like using an existing rule for a new situation. He wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel or anything. He just saw it as a natural extension of the law we already had.
Okay, so no big surprises from Frankfurter. He was all about sticking to precedent. What about Justice Jackson? You said he had more of a cautious take on the whole thing?
Yeah, Justice Jackson, he agreed with the overall decision, but he also issued a warning about war powers, you know, how they can be dangerous if they're not kept in check. He even called it the most dangerous power to free government.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement. It sounds like he was really worried about the government getting too much power, even in times of crisis.
Absolutely. He got it. He understood that war powers, while they're important for protecting the country, they basically give the government a blank check to do whatever they think needs to be done. And he was worried that this kind of unchecked power could be used to chip away at people's freedoms and, you know, undermine democracy itself.
It's kind of like that saying, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hmm.
So what exactly was Justice Jackson worried about? Did he think this particular case was a slippery slope or something?
He didn't necessarily think this case itself was a problem, but he was definitely worried about the bigger picture. You know, he is concerned that governments might use emergencies, whether they're real or made up, as an excuse to grab more power than they really need.
And that seems super relevant to what's going on in the world today. Think about after 9/11 or even the COVID pandemic. Governments are always declaring states of emergency and taking on these huge powers, sometimes with very little oversight.
That's exactly the kind of thing Justice Jackson was worried about. He knew that while war powers are super important when there's a real crisis, they can also be tempting for governments who want to increase their control and, you know, limit individual freedoms.
So how do you balance those two things? On one hand, you have to give the government the tools they need to deal with a crisis effectively. Mm. But on the other hand, you have to make sure they're not abusing that power and that people's freedoms are protected. It's a tough balancing act.
It really is. And that's why Justice Jackson's warning is so important. He was basically telling us to stay alert, to watch out for any attempt to use an emergency as an excuse for taking more power than is necessary. He understood that losing our freedoms often happens slowly, bit by bit, and it's often justified with good intentions.
Yeah, it's easy to think, oh, it's just temporary or it's for the greater good. But those are exactly the kinds of arguments that can lead to chipping away at basic rights.
Exactly. And once those freedoms are gone, they can be really hard to get back. So what does all this mean for the average person, you know, the people listening to this podcast?
I think the main takeaway from Justice Jackson's warning is that it's important to stay informed and engaged. It's our responsibility to understand what powers our government has, to be aware of how they're using those powers, and to speak up when we see something that's not right.
So it's about being an active citizen, not just sitting back and watching. It's about understanding that our rights and freedoms aren't just given to us. They have to be constantly defended and protected. You got it. We can't just assume that someone else will take care of it. We need to be willing to hold our leaders accountable, to demand that they be transparent, and to make sure that the decisions they make for us actually reflect what we believe in.
This case, Woods v. Cloyd, W. Miller Co. It's a great example of how even something that seems kind of boring, like rent control, can bring up really important questions about power in a democracy.
Absolutely. It makes us think hard about the limits of government power, the dangers of unchecked power, and how important it is for citizens to be active in protecting their freedoms. It reminds us that citizens being vigilant is the best defense against tyranny, and that our rights and freedoms are worth fighting for.
Okay, so we've talked about the history of the case, the Supreme Court's decision, and the different opinions from Justices Frankfurter and Jackson. But let's switch gears a little and talk about what happened after this case. What kind of impact did it have on future laws? And how do the ideas from this case apply today, decades after it's decided?
One of the biggest things that came out of Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. is the idea that war powers don't just magically disappear when the fighting stops. The effects of war can last for years, even decades. And the court said that Congress has the authority to deal with those long-term problems, even if it means using war powers in ways that we haven't seen before.
We've covered a lot of ground today, but there's one more thing about Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. that I want to talk about. You mentioned before that this case might actually be relevant to modern issues like climate change. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that. How could a case about rent control after war have anything to do with something as big and complicated as climate change?
It's a good question, and it's something that legal experts are actually arguing about right now. Remember, the big idea that the Supreme Court upheld in Woods was that Congress's war powers don't just end when the fighting stops. They can be used to deal with the effects of war that stick around for a while.
Right. It's not just about when the guns go silent. It's about taking care of the mess that war leaves behind, sometimes for years afterward.
Exactly. Now, think about climate change in the same way. Some people argue that climate change is kind of like war. It creates this emergency situation with huge consequences that might need the government to keep doing something about them for a long time.
Okay, I see what you mean. Like extreme weather, rising sea levels, people being forced to move, economic problems. All those things could be seen as long-term consequences of a global crisis.
Exactly. And just like Congress had the power to regulate rent to fix the housing market after World War II, some people say Congress could use those same powers to deal with the problems caused by climate change.
So that could mean all sorts of things, right? Like investing in renewable energy, taxing carbon emissions, regulating industries that pollute a lot. It's a pretty big idea.
It is. And as you might imagine, not everyone agrees. Some people push back hard. They say that, yeah, climate change is serious, but it's not like war. War is a specific event with a clear enemy. Climate change is more of a long-term problem that's harder to define, and it affects the whole world.
So they're saying that dealing with the aftermath of an actual war is different from responding to something like climate change that doesn't fit the traditional definition of war.
That's the main point they're making. They're also worried about giving the government too much power. They say that giving the government a free pass to do whatever it wants in the name of climate change could lead to too many regulations, people's freedoms being restricted, and the economy being hurt.
So we're back to that balancing act we talked about before. Giving the government the tools to deal with a crisis without letting them abuse that power and making sure people's rights are still protected.
You got it. It's a really complicated question legally and politically, and there are no easy answers. If a case like this went to court, it would be interesting to see how they would weigh those competing interests.
So what do you think the courts would look at when deciding whether Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. could be applied to something like climate change?
Well, they'd probably look at how big the problem is and how bad it is. They'd look at the science behind climate change and see if there really is an emergency. They'd also think about how government action might affect individual rights and the economy. They'd basically want to be sure that the government has a really good reason for using its power and that any action they take is necessary and appropriate to deal with the threat.
So it wouldn't be enough to just say, hey, Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. Says we can do this. The courts would really dig into the details and look at whether it makes sense to use war powers for something that isn't technically a war.
Absolutely. They would look at what the Constitution actually says, what the people who wrote it meant, previous cases that have dealt with similar issues, and what might happen in the long run if they expand the idea of war powers. It would be a huge case that could change how we deal with not just climate change, but all sorts of global problems in the 21st century.
Wow. I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about today. Woods v. Cloyd W. Miller Co. is a case that still matters today. It shapes how we think about the power of the government, the rights of individuals, and how war can have effects that last for generations.
It reminds us that the Constitution isn't just some old document. It's something that's constantly being interpreted and reinterpreted to deal with the challenges we face today. As we face new and complicated threats like climate change, pandemics, and economic instability, the ideas we see in Woods will definitely continue to be part of legal and political debates for a long time to come.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into such an interesting case. I hope everyone listening has learned something new about how the Constitution works, the importance of precedent, and how it can all play a part in making the world a fairer and more just place.
It's been great talking about these ideas with you and our listeners. I hope everyone keeps learning, asking questions, and getting involved with what's going on in the world.